So I'll try to bring him again soon. Okay, what do we discuss in our previous classes?
Krishna is the object of our love, and we have to remember him all the time by chanting.
Krishna is vivid, unlimited, we are insignificant, but we think we are big because of our falsity.
Any other points? Thank you.
By devotional service, we get favor from Krishna.
Good. Any other points?
There is nothing in the material world other than Krishna consciousness.
Then why are we so attracted to Maya?
That is the problem.
Then what will we do about the problem?
Surrender to Guru.
How is it going so far? Easy to talk everything. Any other points?
What is saying? Surrender and service.
How is that going so far?
Okay.
Anything else?
Krishna has got unlimited opulence, and it can give you anything possible, but we lack in faith. We don't have much love for him. So what can we do? And he appreciates even a little service to him. And the example was Ajami. So he just remembered, not even to Lord, he remembered his son, Narayan, but still, he got somewhat benefit. So he appreciated even little service. But we are so foolish. We don't offer him anything else.
That's good. Any other points?
You also mentioned the importance of coming to Shuddha Sattva, through Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness platform. So by following the regulatory principles and regulating our life, then you mentioned that we can make advancement and then come to the platform of mode of goodness. So even if you feel more of passion, you can then elevate ourselves.
Anything else?
You taught us the path of how to reach Krishna and Radha. Basic is to be a servant to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what else?
You told us that we are not qualified enough to serve the Radha Krishna who is in the Vatsalya Rasa. So we first have to serve Lord Chaitanya who is in
that's
it,
us
we get qualification and then we
try to serve
that people.
Yep. Anything else?
By Archbishop, worship of Archbishop, we, after many, many births, we can see Lord Krishna in his original form, like in Vrindavan. But it depends on His mercy and your effort. So we can't do anything without His mercy.
Good. Okay. So tonight we'll begin chapter 6. And we'll go from verses 1 to 12. So now the pastime of the churning of the ocean of milk, a very famous pastime in the Vedic tradition, that will be discussed. So we'll hear about how the demigods and the demons had to cooperate in order to churn the ocean of milk in the very beginning of the universe. And then eventually we'll hear what comes out of the ocean, including some appearance, some pastimes of the Lord. Okay. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King Parikshit, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, being thus worshipped with prayers by the demigods and Lord Brahma, appeared before them. His bodily effulgence resembled the simultaneous rising of thousands of suns. So the demigods have gone to the ocean of milk with Lord Brahma, and they're offering prayers. And the demigods have been overtaken by the demons due to a curse which has come from Devasa Muni. So now they're trying to appease the Lord so that he will give them their positions back in the heavenly planets. The vision of all the demigods was blocked by the Lord's effulgence. Thus they could see neither the sky, the directions, the land, nor even themselves. What to speak of seeing the Lord, who was present before them? Lord Brahma, along with Lord Shiva, saw the crystal clear personal beauty of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose blackish body resembles a marakata gem, whose eyes are reddish like the depths of a lotus, who is dressed with garments and are yellow like molten gold, and whose entire body is attractively decorated. They saw his beautiful smiling lotus-like face, attractive eyebrows, and his cheeks are adorned with earrings. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva saw the belt on the Lord's waist, the bangles on his arms, the necklace on his chest, and the ankle bells on his legs. The Lord is bedecked with flower garlands, his neck is decorated with a Kastuba gem, and he carries with him the goddess of fortune and his personal weapons, like his disc and club. When Lord Brahma, along with Lord Shiva and the other demigods, thus saw the form of the Lord, they all immediately fell to the ground, offering their obeisances. Lord Brahma said, "Although you are never born, your appearance and disappearance as an incarnation never cease. You are always free from the material qualities, and you are the shelter of transcendental bliss, resembling an ocean, eternally existing in your transcendental form. You are the supreme, subtle, of the most extremely subtle. We therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto you, the supreme, whose existence is inconceivable." Janeshwar Prabhu.
The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 4.6, Ajo Kisan Abhyayatma Bhutana Ishwaro Kisan Prakritim Swam Adhishtaya Sambhavami Atmamaya. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all sentient beings, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. In the following verse, in the Bhagavad Gita 4.7, Lord says, Yada yada hi dharmasya glane bhavati bharata pribhyuddhanam adharmasya tadatmanam snajamyam. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. Thus, although the Supreme Lord is unborn, there is no cessation to his appearance in different forms as incarnations like Lord Krishna and Lord Rama. Since his incarnations are eternal, the various activities performed by these incarnations are also eternal. The Supreme Personality of Godhead does not appear because he is forced to do so by karma, like ordinary living entities who are forced to accept a certain types of body. It is to be understood that the Lord's body and activities are all transcendental, being free from the contamination of the material modes of nature. These pastimes are transcendental bliss to the Lord. The word aparigarnya dhamme is very significant. There is no limit to the Lord's appearance in different incarnations. All these incarnations are eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge.
I wonder who that must be. Only one person in the material world could be this late.
I have one question. In the translation, Prabhupada is saying, you are the supreme subtle of the most extremely subtle. Can you please explain?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we can discuss that. Any other points?
Anything
else?
in purport, Srila Prabhupada writes that it is, he comes to give bliss to his devotees, but he feels blissful as well.
So the Bhagavatam is called Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavat means personality. Bhaga, van. Technically, the word bhag means opulence. Vana means the abode. You know, just like we have Vrindavan. Vana means like the abode or the place, or the, we say the forest. So it means the abode of bhag. Bhag means opulence. And Krishna has six opulences: Aishwaryasya, Samagrasya, Viyasya, Yashasya, Shriyaha, Jnana Vairagyaschaiva, Shanambhaga, Itingana. Six principal opulences are there. So, Krishna has unlimited opulence. And this is the definition of Bhaga, Vaya. So, Srimad Bhagavatam means the pastimes of Bhaga, Vaya, the beautiful. Srimad means beautiful. Pastimes of Bhagavan. So he is unlimitedly opulent. Lila Mai, get it together quickly.
Yeah, I want to open the door and keep
going. Why didn't you come 15 minutes ago and open the door instead of disrupting my class? It's rude. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, these are the pastimes of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the Bhagavat philosophy, or the philosophy of the personality of Godhead. So we must accept within our heart deeply that God is a person. Even some devotees have told me over the years that they still struggle with understanding the concept that God is a person. The impersonalistic tendency is very strong. It is deep-rooted. Because if God is a person, that means we have to serve him. And the reason we came to the material world is because we don't want to serve. Matsara. Matsara means envy. We're here because we're envious. So therefore, we don't want to serve God, don't want to serve Krishna. Because we don't want to serve, we don't have that service propensity. That's why people are attracted to the impersonalistic philosophy, or the Mayavada philosophy. Prabhupada says, impersonalism is the last snare of Maya. It's the last way that Maya captures you. Even if you give up material desires and all other things, but still the desire to be God, as opposed to serving God, that is very strong, very powerful. So it binds the conditioned soul, binds the living entity. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is to teach us that God is a person. He is not impersonal. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdite. Now, there are three phases of the Absolute Truth. Part of the Absolute Truth is the impersonal feature. You cannot separate the impersonal feature from the personal feature. That's the point. And whenever you see Krishna, he has Brahma Jyoti, his halo. So you cannot separate it. Krishna will never have. He will never be existent without Brahma Jyoti. So Brahma Jyoti and Krishna always exist together. But they are different, one and different. It is Krishna's effulgence, it is part of Krishna, it is Krishna's energy, his Shakti, but it is not Krishna, it is not the personality. So Paramatma, Bhagavan and Brahman are three phases of the Absolute Truth. And you cannot separate them. You cannot have one without the other. All must be there. But the ultimate understanding of God is Bhagavan. It is realization that God is a person. And that's what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. So, we're getting closer to the 10th canto now. We're over halfway through. So we're getting closer to the 10th canto. So, the whole purpose of studying the Bhagavatam is to deeply make it apparent or make it embedded within our consciousness that God is a person. So it is describing here. The first verse described, when the demigods saw him, when Lord Brahma saw him, he was so effulgent they could hardly even look at him. So what does this mean? Jamma kama chami divyam. Divya, the Lord is divya. His form is divine. It is not material. It is spiritual. Very hard to perceive spirit. Have we ever seen anything spiritual? Yeah, we've never seen anything spiritual. In this material world, we only see matter. And it's very hard to perceive spirit with material senses. So in the demigods, when they saw the Lord, it was blinding. They couldn't even see his form properly because there was so much effulgence coming. Because they're dealing with spirit. You're dealing with the spiritual energy, pure. In order to see the spiritual energy, as Prabhupada explains in this section, premanjanach churita bhakti balochinina, one must have eyes which are purified by prema, or love for Krishna. When you have love for Krishna, which is the prayojana, or the goal of Krishna consciousness, then you will see Krishna face to face. And Prabhupada said, this is the goal of the Krishna consciousness movement. It is to see Krishna face to face. And to take him by the hand, Prabhupada says, as Mother Yashoda does, and meet him. That is the goal. So to see Krishna face to face, that is not easy. That is difficult. Because his form is spiritual, and our eyes at this point in time, our senses are contaminated. So we have to become pure. When we are purified, then we will see Krishna in his original form. So then when the demigods did see him, there was so much variety in his attributes. So much variety is there. This is the nature of personality. Personality means there's variety. No two people are the same. So Krishna is unique. So what does it describe? There's a long description of his... it says here, only Lord Brahma, along with Lord Shiva, at this point in time. Although it does mention that the other demigods see him also.
In the same pastime?
Maybe we'd have to read further into this instance, but you'll see as we go through this this canto, he appears as Mohini Murti, which is a spiritual form, and all the demigods can see. And then he comes as Vamana, and all the demigods can see. So even the demigods can see him. It may not be mentioned at this exact moment they can see him, but they do get to see him. When Krishna came to earth and the Rajasuya sacrifice was performed, all the demigods were in the arena, they could see.
I think Krishna made himself his will, because even the demons saw
But then Prabhupada says that even Duryodhan saw Krishna and he was envious. So it's not easy to see Krishna, that's the point. If he desires, then you can see him.
So now we can explain that the devotees can't see him and the demons, they could see him.
Then, just like with the Murti, if people go into the temple, they see the deity form, but not everyone sees it as a deity. Some people won't see life, they'll just see it as just a stone. So even though Krishna is there, but they may not perceive all of his attributes. So they see some like material kind of form. So, it says here that he has a blackish body resembling a Marakata gem. What does that mean?
Blackish,
yeah.
He was wearing a jewel or mala, basically, made of that Marakata gem.
No, it says his body is the color of a Marakata gem.
Which is greenish blue or black blue.
Okay. Is it Marakata?
Yeah.
A greenish?
Yes.
Okay.
Nothing is sapphire.
Could be an amber sapphire. What was it saying? See what it says in
there. Yes. Marakata.
Where is it, Marakata? It's in the third line. With a bodily, it says Marakata Shamam. The bodily luster of a light blue gem. Light blue gem. So. Marakata. Sounds like it's a description for like a sapphire. That's what it sounds like. Marakata.
The sapphires are different color. They can be dark.
Okay.
So I think it must be the dark
blue gem.
It says bluish. So what color is Krishna?
Black.
Bluish black. That's a sham. Sham means bluish black. Like that. So this is Krishna's divine color. It is a spiritual color. It is not a material color. But to see that color, then you have to be purified. Now it says that that color is the color of personified bliss. Why is Krishna that color, bluish, blackish color? Yeah, it's the color or the form of personified bliss. When you feel very blissful, you turn that color.
See, when the cloud is filled with water.
Yeah.
The cloud, when it is filled with water represents the bliss.
Something like that.
And so the Lord looks like the cloud.
Let's not speculate too much.
But that's what I did.
So he's a bluish blackish color. This is
so
Krishna's
when
color.
You say written that bluish color is the color of bliss.
Say it again.
You said that the bluish color is the color of the bliss.
Yeah.
When it says that?
There's some commentaries by the Acharyas. I think it might be in Venu Gita, Shivram Swami's book. Then he quotes some of the previous Acharyas and explains that this color is there. I've read it. Like that. I think it's in Venu Gita. It's one of Manashina Shivram Swami's books. So, whose eyes are reddish like the depths of the lotus. So it says within the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that different parts of Krishna's body are like the lotus. He has lotus hands, lotus feet, lotus navel, lotus eyes, lips. Yeah, that could be. Could be compared to the lotus. So it says a different part of Krishna's forms are like a lotus. So that means that Krishna's eyes are like a lotus. What is the lotus like? Yeah, the shape is like
that.
Like that. And it says that Krishna's eyes, Lord Chaitanya's eyes, go back towards his ears. And very large, longish eyes like that. But then it says that the eyes, the white of the eye, which is called the iris, right, the whitish part of the eyes, it is like reddish, like the
sclera.
Like the lotus.
Why it is called sclera?
Sclera, yeah. Iris is the middle part in the pupil. Okay. So the sclera. So the white part of the eye, Krishna's eye is reddish. Now why is it reddish? Because he always has tears in his eyes. So you know when you have tears in your eyes go reddish. So Krishna always has tears in his eyes because he's always feeling prema or love for his devotees. So therefore his eyes are considered to be like a lotus, that reddish kind of pinkish color. Okay. And it is described that his garments are like molten gold. So we know that the color of his garlands are the color of Srimati Radharani. So he likes to wear golden garments, so he remembers Radha. And Radha likes to wear bluish garments, so she remembers Krishna. So Krishna always has this golden. His entire body is attractively decorated. So this is a description of Narayan, of Vishnu. So Vishnu likes to wear many jewels. But when Krishna's in Vrindavan, he wears jewels, but he prefers to wear forest flowers. He prefers flowers even more than jewels in Vrindavan. When he goes to Dwarka, then he wears more crowns and things like this. But in Vrindavan, he dresses much more simply. And he prefers more than jewels. He wears jewels, but he prefers more than jewels to wear flowers. Yeah, he likes to wear garlands. This will be described. We'll get to the garland. The Lord has attractive eyebrows. So his eyebrows are like Cupid's bow. Yeah, he's always moving his eyebrows like that. And when he moves his eyebrows, the gopis become captivated. Yeah, when he moves his eyebrows like that. So it's like the bow of Cupid. And his cheeks are adorned with earrings. So what are Krishna's earrings like?
Shark.
Yeah. Markat. Markat means? It means a sea monster. You see his earrings said to be shaped like a shark, but then it has like an elephant's like head. You see like his flute? You see at the end of his flute? See what's at the end? Yeah, elephant, but it actually goes into the body of a like a fish.
Yes.
So it's like a fish. It's like some sort of sea monster, makata. Sometimes it's crocodile or shark, like that. So some sort of creature like that. So he has long earrings, like that, which glisten and they reflect the color of his skin, which is the bluish black. And so long, kind of like these makat kind of earrings, and they sway whenever he is. And they are said to be his topmost ornament, the most beautiful of all of his ornaments. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva saw the belt on the Lord's waist, the bangles on his arms, the necklace on his chest, and the ankle bells on his legs. The Lord is bedecked with flower garlands. So it says that when Krishna wears a flower garland, the flower garland is made of 7 different types of flowers. Very opulent.
Yeah.
A lot of the time here in Melbourne, we just offer the deities, what are they called? Carnations. So it's one flower.
Malati.
Then we offer different colors like that. But in a auspicious place, in the tropical places, then you can offer many different types of flowers. And of all the different types of flowers, Krishna prefers the whitish flowers. He likes the white, like the jasmine and the different ones. And it says that of all the flowers, the king of the flowers is the gardenia. Gardenias have this most intoxicating fragrance. And it says that the gardenia, the fragrance of the gardenia is the closest to the fragrance of Krishna's form. Because when Krishna walks on the earth, when he comes to Vrindavan, then he's the aroma or the flavor of his body, because the most intoxicating aroma in the universe is Krishna, the aroma of his body. So when he walks in Vrindavan, then his aroma goes into the earth and it comes up through all the flowers. So each flower has part of Krishna's aroma, like the rose and gulab, the jasmine, all these beautiful frangipani. But out of all of them, the gardenia has the most of his fragrance. It smells the most like Krishna's. Well, intoxicating. Devotees become intoxicated just when they smell Krishna. In the spiritual world, when they just smell Krishna's aroma, they become intoxicated. He's intoxicating. His neck is decorated with the Kostuba gem. What is the Kostuba gem? That is the most valuable gem in the existence. Krishna always wears 2 gems on his chest. What are the 2 gems?
One's with the calf.
Yeah, one has the calf on him. Which one is that?
Kostuba.
The Kostuba. Yeah. So he always has the Kostuba mani, which has a calf, like engraved on it. And actually it describes in the Bhagavatam, in the commentaries, the Kostuba mani is made up of all of the different jivas. Because Krishna likes to keep all the jivas on his chest. In other words, all of us. So the atomic fragment, the souls, every little soul, then Krishna keeps on his chest as Kostuba mani. It keeps us very close to him. And it has a calf on it. It's the most valuable jewel, the most beautiful jewel Krishna always wears. And the other jewel that he always wears is called the moon locket. And the moon locket is congealed moonbeams. So during the daytime, when the night, because in the spiritual world, it is Purnima every night. Right? In the spiritual world, it's always full moon. In the material world, we go from dark to light, like that. But in the spiritual world, every night is Purnima. So at nighttime, when Krishna goes into the forest, the jewel, it melts, and the because it's made of moonbeam, moonshine, so it melts and it goes back into the moon. And then in the daytime, at the end of the night, when Krishna finishes his pastimes, it comes into the, and then it turns into a jewel, and then during the day it glows like the moon.
Can you say again for the night?
What's that?
Can you say again for the night? Can you say again what happens during the night?
At the night it melts, and it, the jewel goes into the moonbeams, because it is made of moonshine. And then at daytime, then it comes and it turns into a jewel.
You are talking about Kasturba Jain.
No, no, there's a different one called Moon Locket.
Moon Locket.
Yes. He has two. He has one. He wears many jewels. He wears different necklaces, but these two he always has. Kasturba.
Can you please spell that? Moon Locket.
Moon Locket. This is English. In Sanskrit, I don't know what it's called. It's called Moon Locket.
I want to ask you, you said there is this day and night in spiritual world, but I also heard that it's always a budget, there is no night.
No, that's in the Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says there is no need in the spiritual world of sun, moon, fire, or electricity. Krishna says that. That's because Krishna, wherever Krishna is, he is effulgent, but it doesn't mean there's no day and night in the spiritual world. It's the same as here, right? Sun comes up, goes down, moon comes up, goes down, every day. Spiritual world is ashtakaliya, eightfold daily pastime. So morning, noon, evening, midnight, I think, every day.
I also heard that there are not just one moon, there is so many moons.
No, there's one moon. Not like there's hundreds of moons. There's one moon. The moon gives shine, the sun gives shine, but also Krishna himself gives shine. So Krishna says in Gita, I don't need the moon, I don't need the sun, because I'm there. But they are there also. Because where does the moon come from? It comes from Krishna. Where does the sun come from? It comes from Krishna. So it's, in one sense, it's Krishna's Shakti or his energy.
So what he does, he withdraws his effulgence when it's night.
No, it's still there. He's still effulgent. Effulgence doesn't mean like everything's lit up, but it means, you know, he's always has a glow, always has an effulgence. I mean, if he wants to, he can make everything light up, but, you know, but he always has some sort of glow about him. So.
How can we be here and in the Kasturba jewel at the same time?
Say it again.
The Kasturba money? How are all the jivas there and here at the same time?
If it's like that, I'm not sure exactly what it means, but it says that the Kasturba money is made up of all the jivas. So I don't know what that means, you know, but Krishna can reconcile these things. He can keep all of us very close to him, and simultaneously we can be in his pastimes also. So I don't know how he does it or what it means, but it says that. It says in one place, there's a commentary, it says the Kasturba money is made up of all of the jivas, like that. So, any other points?
I heard that the garland of the pearls which he puts it on, that is made of all the jivas as well.
I haven't heard that, but maybe.
Everything is made of jewels there. There's nothing which is made of matter.
Yeah, everything is spirit. Internal energy. Any other points?
His bodily effulgence resembled simultaneous rising of thousands of suns.
Anything else? So what do you think of this person?
Most beautiful.
I want to see him.
Not able to think.
What does that mean?
It's not able to perceive or inconceivable.
Why is it inconceivable?
It's quite hard to put things in place and see the deity here, that's fine.
But someone has a necklace which is made of the moon. You find that hard to conceive?
We conceive that maybe not right.
It's a test of faith. All these things are a test of faith. What are you going to believe? You have to believe in something. Either you believe in evolution, or you believe in the the boy who lives in the forest or has a necklace made of the moon. So take your pick. I'd rather believe in the guy who has the necklace made of the moon. So he is extraordinary.
If he can come out of the pillar with all the jewels and everything, with the effulgence, what can he do? Can do anything.
So basically the Bhagavatam is teaching us, who else could be God?
Mm-hmm.
It must be Krishna. Who else is this amazing? Who else has got a necklace which is made of moonshine? So he's our God. There's no one who can match him or compete with him. There's no one like Krishna. And the more you get to know Krishna, the more you'll become captivated by Krishna. He is intoxicating. Actually, that's what his name means. Sri Krishna Karshani. In Nectar of Devotion explains, there are six qualities of Prema Bhakti. Sri Krishna Karshani is the last quality. Sandrananda, Visheshatma, and then Sri Krishna Karshani. Karshani means it captures Krishna. Bhakti captures Krishna. Sri Krishna Karshani. It controls Krishna. So Karshna means to capture. So Krishna's name, Krishna, means that he captures everyone. All attractive. All attractive means he captures everyone. So he's the most attractive person. So we have to let him attract us. We have to stop giving him a hard time. We make his life difficult.
I think Moonlock is called, in Sanskrit, is called Chandramani.
Chandramani.
Every time there is some scientists find something, recently they found that, I don't know exactly, but they found earlier, about a year or so ago, they found this God particle. And recently...
they didn't find the God particle. That's what they said.
Yeah. Recently they're claiming that they seem to have found some energy, it's a further lead from God particle.
Which
is the cause of this creation or, you know, something.
So
there's this healthy fear in me that, you know, are they going to find something that that will prove, you know, all this wrong? The
problem with you is you spend too much time on the internet. Who cares about God particle? They spent $3 billion or something, or more, something, to find this God particle. I mean, if you actually... Have you heard about the what they constructed in Sweden?
It's big thing.
Underground.
Yeah.
It's massive. It's 15 kilometers of tunnels.
Yeah.
I mean, have you seen pictures of it?
No.
Yeah, I mean, look it up on the internet. It's ridiculous how much money they spent on it. $3 billion.
Right?
Huh?
What is it for?
Look it up, man. I haven't got time to explain it. You know, to find this God particle. This excitement was ridiculous, right? So they spent $3 billion. You know, if you actually saw the God particle, like they, you know, make the particle smash and then they analyze the atom. If you saw the God particle, Paramatma would be standing there going. Because that is the God particle. So obviously they didn't find it, so who cares? And did it make any difference to anyone on Earth? We found the God particle.
What is the meaning of God particle?
Paramatma.
How can it be?
Paramatma is he's in every atom, he's in every...
Yeah.
He's the God particle, so what's the difference? So they didn't get anything out of the whole thing. So don't take these guys seriously.
I just fear sometimes that are they going to, sometime, you know, even 100 years from now, be able to find something which will say, oh, you know, whatever we are reading. It's basically... All these, through these cantos, we are developing our faith, right? And then, you know what I mean?
No idea what you mean at all. I think you need to wash the pots more. Then you'll get some realization about the God particle. Because you've got no idea what's going on at this point in time. Because these guys have got no idea what's going on. Who cares? $3 billion. You know, go and spend $3 million on distributing prasadam in Africa if you want to do something. If you want to give the God particle to someone, then do something practical with you instead of this stupid Swedish scientific thing which didn't do anything. It hasn't affected anyone on earth. Right? Even if they did something, okay. I mean, did it make a difference to anyone on the earth? You know, 1 in 8 people every night go to bed hungry on the earth. Did it make any difference to them? Who cares? They found a God particle. There's people starving.
If they want to find it, they can wash Krishna's pots.
Yeah. Then you'll understand something. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said, go and wash the pots. And go and polish the brass. And then the guy got all the answers. His professor came to Bhakti. He said, I want to ask you questions. He said, go and do some seva. Did the seva, he came back, he said, all the questions are answered. So just do something, and then, you know, you're not washing the pots regularly. You had a question?
In terms of the gardenia and the frangipani, I think I read in Yamanda Vrindavan Champu that the whole earth got its scent from when Krishna was bathed, when Mother Yashoda would bathe him, and then the water would fall onto the earth, and that's where Bhumi would get her scent from.
Yeah, everything comes from Krishna. So, are you impressed by him? You have to be impressed. He's the most impressive person.
Very simple rule.
Huh?
If you put faith in God, then God particularly.
Yeah, but this is Krishna. He's not God. This is Krishna. As many people have ideas about God, but our idea about God is quite extraordinary.
Origin of Vishnu.
Yeah, I mean, our God wears a necklace which is made of the moonshine. For me, I couldn't believe in any other god. Every other god is boring. This god is the real god.
One day we are going to see him face to face.
We hope so. And he carries with him the goddess of fortune and his personal weapons. This means Krishna is always with his associates. Prabhupada said, if you see a picture of Krishna alone, that is not Krishna. Because Krishna is never alone. He's never alone. He's always with devotees. So Prabhupada said, any picture of Krishna alone, that is not Krishna.
But if we cook for Krishna, we have to cook for his associates as well.
Yeah. That's why when we cook on the altar, then we put a cup there for Gaur, for Nitai. Like that. So we're cooking for Krishna plus his. We're cooking for Radha, Krishna, Jagannath, Balaram, Subhadra.
Krishna is not his associates.
And he carries with him the goddess of fortune like his disc and club. When Lord Brahma, along with Lord Shiva and the other demigods, thus saw the form of the Lord, they all immediately fell to the ground, offering their obeisances. So we have to fall to the ground and offer our obeisances. Whenever we see the deity, just like I was chanting in the temple the other day, and one of the brahmacharis, he came to the door, and he was looking for someone in the temple room. So he put his head in, you know, his feet were outside the temple, but he put his head in, he looked like, and he went back out. Because his feet, but I was looking at him and I was thinking, actually, this is incorrect. Because, you know, you just looked inside the temple. And it says within the Nectar of Devotion, in the Shastra, it says, whenever you see the deity, you have to offer your obeisances. So devotees, sometimes they like to take shortcuts. You know, just put your head in the temple and just wave to Radha Balava to say, Hare Krishna. Prabhupada didn't say horrible, then, but it doesn't work like that. So whenever we see Krishna, we should offer our obeisances. Even one time, one devotee said to Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, I don't feel like offering my obeisances to you. And Prabhupada says, do it anyway, and then the feeling will come.
Shruti Kirti.
So a devotee said like that. Prabhupada said, but do it anyway and the feeling will come. So we have to offer our obeisances to Krishna. And then the feeling will come. Why do we offer obeisances? Because we're saying, I am your servant. You bow down to your master. So this is putting in our consciousness that we are Krishna's servants. So don't avoid offering your obeisances to Krishna. Any other points? Okay. O best of persons, O supreme director, those who actually aspire for supreme good fortune worship this form of your lordship according to the Vedic tantras. My lord, we can see all the three worlds in you.
Can you jump back to 1:8?
I didn't read 8. Yeah, I read 8.
The Vedic mantras say, Yasmin Vijayamcha Sarvam Devam Vijayam Tam Bhavati Mukunda Mukundaka Upanishad 1.3. When the devotees see the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his meditation, or when he sees the Lord personally, face to face, he becomes aware of everything within this universe. Indeed, nothing is unknown to him. Everything within this material world is fully manifested to a devotee who has seen the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhagavad Gita 4.34 therefore advises, Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasvena sevya upakshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshana. Just try to learn the truth by approaching the spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Lord Brahma is one of these self-realized authorities. Swayambhu Narada Sambhu Kumaram Kapilo Muna. One must therefore accept the disciplic succession from Lord Brahma, and then one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead in fullness. Here the word Viswamurtau indicates that everything exists in the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is able to worship him can see everything in him and see him in everything.
Any points?
It says Panditas in Darshana. So this Pandit says everything in him and him in everything.
That's good. Any other points?
One who sees Krishna will know everything. If I see Krishna will know everything. For example, the one who has realized Brahman, he is full of knowledge, Sat, the impersonal features of the world. And realization is not the body, but when you see Bhagavan, then you know everything.
That's good. Any other points?
It's important to understand God, because when we understand, then only we can try to serve him, see him, hear about him.
One must follow the disciplic succession.
Yeah, in Parampara. So one, Prabhupada says that one who knows Krishna knows everything. So Prabhupada was explaining this one time to the reporter. Prabhupada said, one who knows Krishna, he knows everything. And the reporter said, Swamiji, do you know everything? And Srila Prabhupada said, yes. And then the reporter said, how many windows are there in the Empire State Building? And Prabhupada said, how many drops of water are there in a mirage? So the pure devotee, he knows everything because he knows Krishna. He knows everything. Everything which needs to be known. He doesn't need to know how many windows there are in the Empire State Building because it doesn't matter how many. But anything which is actually important, he knows that. So if we realize Krishna, then we will realize everything. Right? If we become Krishna conscious, we'll understand everything. We'll understand the God particle. Krishna said, if you know me, if you have devotion, you will know everything. You'll know the truth. You'll know the difference between matter and spirit. And that is the actual truth. What is the difference between matter? What is the difference between spirit? So that is actual knowledge. That is Divya Jnana, Hriday Prakashita. Not that we know some material knowledge. That's not important. So Prabhupada explains that a devotee develops Shastra Chakshush. This is the 12th aim of Shastric study. When we study the Shastra, according to our VTE curriculum, the 12th aim is Shastric. Shastra Chakshush. It means divine vision, or seeing things through the eyes of the Shastra. Learning to see things spiritually. We have to look at the world through the eyes of Shastra. Right. Just like I sometimes listen to the radio just to hear the news. I was driving up to Melbourne today, so I turn on the radio at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock at the news time, listen to the news for a few minutes, find out what's going on. But we see it through the eyes of Shastra. Right. And what is the condition of the world? It's crazy. Right. So that's how we see it. But they think, oh, it's very important, all these news items. It's not important. It's all just problems, Kali Yuga problems. So a devotee, when he knows Krishna, he sees everything in perspective. He understands the truth. Tattva Darshina means he understands, he sees things truthfully or properly. Any points? My dear Lord, who are always fully independent. This entire cosmic manifestation arises from you, rests upon you, and ends in you. Your Lordship is the beginning, sustenance, and end of everything, like the earth, which is the cause of an earthen pot, which supports the pot, and to which the pot, when broken, finally returns. O Supreme, you are the independent in yourself and do not take help from others. Through your own potency, you create this cosmic manifestation and enter into it. Those who are advanced in Krishna consciousness and who are fully in knowledge of the authoritative Shastra and who, through the practice of Bhakti Yoga, are cleansed of all material contamination, can see with their clear minds that although you exist within the transformations of the material qualities, your presence is untouched by these qualities. So Prabhupada explains that we learn to see Krishna through the teachings of Krishna and the spiritual master. Brahmanda Brahmite Mona Bhagyavanajiv Guru Krishna Prasad Vipai Bhakti Latabija. Guru Krishna Prasad. How do we learn about Krishna? By Krishna's prasad. Krishna's mercy. And what is Krishna's mercy? He gives you guru. Krishna, Prabhupada explains, Krishna leads you to your guru. And then your guru leads you back to Krishna. So it is Krishna's mercy, his prasad, that we get to meet a spiritual master, and the spiritual master gives us instruction how to meet Krishna. How do you see Krishna? Just like Prabhupada said one time, you cannot see Krishna in the bushes of Vrindavan. You can go to Vrindavan, you can wander around for years, but you won't see Krishna. If you're advanced, you'll see Krishna. But Prabhupada said, don't try to see Krishna in the bushes of Vrindavan. See him in the instruction of the spiritual master. This is how we see Krishna. When we follow the guru's instruction, we will automatically see Krishna. If you don't follow your guru's instructions, how will you ever see Krishna? So you can wander around Vrindavan for the rest of your life, but you won't see Krishna unless you're following the instruction of your guru. Huh? Did your guru tell you to wander around Vrindavan? One time, Prabhupada came out of his residence, his house in Vrindavan, and one devotee was there, and he said to the devotee, "Where are you going?" And he said to Prabhupada, he said, "Prabhupada, I'm going to Radhakund, which is the topmost place in the spiritual world." Prabhupada said, "There are already enough monkeys in Radhakund." In other words, you have to be qualified. If your guru gives you an instruction to stay in Vrindavan and wander around and find Krishna, then yes, that's okay. But if your guru doesn't give you instruction, so when you follow guru's instruction, you will see Krishna. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they were wandering around Vrindavan. Hey Radhe, Brajadevi ke chalalite, hey Nanda suno kuta. They were wandering around, looking for Krishna. But they were instructed by their guru. Rupa and Sanatana Goswami were instructed by Lord Chaitanya to go to Vrindavan. Right, and to uncover the holy places. That was their instruction of their guru. Therefore they saw Krishna. But we can't see Krishna just by concocting our own ideas. You only see Krishna when you follow the guru's instructions. If you follow guru's instructions, you will see Krishna. One day we will see Krishna. But only when we follow what the guru teaches us. Okay. Any other comments? So read one more paragraph. Very nice. There's two nice paragraphs here. Okay, so we go to verse 12. As one can derive fire from wood, milk from the milk bag of the cow, food grains and water from the land, and prosperity in one's livelihood from industrial enterprises, so by the practice of bhakti yoga, even within this material world, one can achieve your favor or intelligently approach you. Those who are pious all affirm this. So we read the third paragraph. Sugadev Prabhu.
In this verse, the cultivation of bhakti is compared to many material activities. By friction, one can get firm fire from wood. By digging earth, one can get the food, grain, and water. And by agitating the milk bag of the cow, one can get nectar in milk. Milk is compared to nectar, which one can drink to become immortal. Of course, simply drinking the milk will not make one immortal, but it can increase the duration of one's life. In modern civilization, men do not think milk to be important, and therefore they do not live very long. Although in this age men can live up to 100 years, their duration of life is reduced because they do not drink large quantity of milk. This is a sign of Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, instead of drinking milk, people prefer to slaughter an animal and eat its flesh. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his instruction of Bhagavad Gita, verse is Goraksha, which means cow protection. The cow should be protected. Milk should be drawn from the cow, and this milk should be prepared in various ways. One should take ample milk, and thus one can prolong one's life, develop his brain, execute devotional service, and ultimately obtain the favor of Krishna, Personality of Godhead. As it is essential to get food, grain, and water by digging earth, it is also essential to give protection to the cow and take nectar and milk from their milk bags.
So this is the philosophy of the Bhagavatam. In the last 100 years, human society has wrecked the earth. But before that, for thousands of years, everyone was just living as it's described here. Right? Just milking the cows, getting the food, like that. But people these days think it's more important to get whatever comes out of the factories. But then Prabhupada said, you can't live on nuts and bolts. And you can't eat nuts and bolts. We need milk and grains and vegetables and fruits like this. So this is the way the earth was for thousands of years. And Prabhupada says we have to go backwards to go forwards. Right? To go forward in human society, we have to go back to what we were. And that's why Prabhupada developed the farm communities. And if you look around ISKCON, hardly any of the farm communities are working. Just like we have this farm here, it's not working. Right? Where's the food? Where's the milk? All these things are not there. So it's part of Prabhupada's mission to develop these things. So there is food, so there is milk. This is how humans are meant to live, just on the land. Everyone comes to the farm and they say, it's so nice, but we have to live on the land, not just go there once a year. Right. But that is actually how human society is meant to live. This is the Bhagavat philosophy. And human society will only be peaceful, prosperous, and happy when they live like that. That's why society is not happy, because you can't be happy living in another way. Too difficult. You have to work too long hours. No happiness in that. Okay.
And so, here it says that we should drink more milk. Doctors suggest that only one cup a day. Don't drink more. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, iron will not get absorbed.
They change their theories every... every 6 months anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Like in Australia and America, and probably India as well, in Australia and America, back in the 60s, the government passed a law that every child in the school has to have free milk every day. Every child got a small bottle of milk every day for free. That was part of the government made the rule in America and Australia. Yeah, in 1960s, yeah. Every kid. And now they say the opposite. They change their minds all the time, so we don't really. But the Bhagavatam says milk is the best food. It is the best food.
Maybe now with the hormones they're putting in the milk,
it's
not good to
drink. Yeah, I mean, if I drink the milk from the shop, I only drink the organic one, Parmalate. I only drink that one. Yeah, better is to get the cow's milk, actually, from the cow. But if you're going to drink that, only drink the organic one. Don't drink the other one. Costs $1 more per litre. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Yes.
So tomorrow we'll